Blog Talk Radio.
This is Deflection 2016, our special episode tonight, Meltdown. It is October 13th, 2016. I was about to say 2013 for whatever reason. I have Matt Stannard on with
me. Good Lord.
I'm Gary Bork. I know. 2013, oh, we can only look back to those halcyon days, can't we?
Exactly. Presidents starting wars, you know, little things like that.
I know.
I know. I'm Matt Stannard. It's great to be here with my colleague Gary Barkley, who is coming in live from Utah, and that's really one of our questions. You know, this has been such an election season of randomness and sort of unexpected turns and twists, or at least a lot of the official predictions have turned out wrong. But definitely one of the questions that people started asking as early as, you know, even 6 to 8 months ago, Gary, was can the real estate tycoon lose Utah? Could we be headed to a scenario? This was before, the primaries were still going on, but it was becoming apparent that the tycoon was going to win. And people started asking that, and your friend and mine, Russell Fox, blogged about it. And now it looks like, given the meltdown that I'm assuming everyone knows about, I don't want to. It's like telling the joke, you know, the aristocrats. I mean, you don't really want to go through every step by step thing that he did to meltdown. But now, Gary, they're talking about him losing Utah. What's going on there? Remind us again of this rogue candidate and the general dynamic of the election in Utah, and why we think that Hillary Clinton or a third party or a rogue Republican could win there.
Well, you know, being in Utah, I have to say it came as a shock. I know that the Salt Lake Tribune came out with this, two or three days ago or just after the weekend, so probably on Tuesday or so when they came out with it. It was their weekend poll, and they came out, and essentially Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, and this third guy, don't even ask me his name because I've heard it for the first time on that.
Isn't it Ewan McGregor? It's Ewan McGregor,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, that's it.
The
McGregor. Yeah.
No. Right, yeah, exactly.
I didn't even look into it because, you know, it's basically a two-way
McDougal.
Race. A three-way race. Each of them getting essentially about 30% of the vote, if I remember correctly. Never heard of this McGregor guy before. He's probably one of these, you know, radical right-wing racist kind of organizations that you would tend to think that basically it's like, if I can't vote for Donald Trump, I'll vote for this other racist kind of approach.
I don't know if the guy's a racist. I mean, he's not going to be worse. He's not going to be, you know, like a savage, you know, horrible person, because the entire point of this is that, or at least the narrative is, Utahns are basically decent people. And Donald Trump crossed enough lines.
I don't disagree with that.
Finally, where he had no one left. He had no one left in. He's got no one left in Utah to lie to or to you know, to offend. I mean, I don't know. That's my.
No, I agree with that. Well, you have to remember though that Utahns aren't, you know, and when I say that, you know, Utahns would be voting for, hey, if I'm not voting for this Republican racist, I'll vote for this other racist. Keep in mind that Utah, I live here, I've lived here my whole life, and when I say Utahns, I don't want our audience to think that I'm saying, hey, Mormons are doing this, because that's not what I'm talking about. I live in Utah, I've lived here my whole life, and well, except for the first 8 years and, of course, my time in the Army. But, you know, I'm not saying Mormons are saying, hey, if I can't vote for this racist, I'll vote for this other. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that we have enough backwater people that aren't Mormon Whether they're Mormon or not, it doesn't really matter. But the fact is, we have enough backwater people. We have enough really, truly, I mean, we're talking about frontier type. They believe that they are rugged individualists, although they have no problem with taking government handouts. And again, as a liberal, mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with government handouts when they are needed. What we just sure. have, you know, welfare ranchers and things like that. And that's what it comes down to.
The Bundy, yeah, the Bundy types
yeah,
are
exactly.
voting for the real estate
exactly.
guy, aren't
it's the,
they?
It's
I mean,
the Bundy types.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Those are the 30% that say, hey, I'm going to still vote for Donald Trump no matter what. The other 20% are a third of them are those of us who are, of course, just liberals. And then, of course, the fair-minded or basically I'm just going to say the nonconformist Mormons who would vote for a Democrat. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, the Mormon church has always prided itself on not telling people how to vote. And I've never been to a Mormon church during, you know, sermons, so I can't say either way. But nonetheless, I have.
I mean, and clearly the culture is incredibly conservative. And in
oh, yes.
any other election
no
year, this would not be a question. And that's
yes,
the
correct.
Amazing thing about
right.
it, is that it is
yeah.
a question this year. And so we have to ask ourselves and sort of lead with the question. And I think many national news organizations right now are leading with the question, how low, how awful, how primordially offensive can a GOP candidate be that they are in danger now of losing in Utah? That is the question. I want a brief footnote.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm in Wyoming, and the GOP nominee is not going to have any problem here. And so in Wyoming,
if you answer
the question, how low, awful, offensive, dirty, crude, sexist, violent, vile, sickening can a GOP candidate go and still win Wyomingites? Well, Liz Cheney.
Well,
is
you know the answer.
Likely to be our next member of the U.S. House of Representatives. Liz Cheney is leading Ryan Greene, her Democratic opponent, and so that's how low. If you want to know how low, we're about to elect another Cheney, Utah very different ambiance politically.
Well, you know, I would be interested also in, I mean, Wyoming obviously is a given. Utah obviously a toss-up, which really is a surprising thing. But I have to say, you know, I'm curious about Idaho. I mean, you've lived in this region too. I mean, you're from Wyoming. You know, Idaho and Utah and Wyoming all are very, very close in terms of a lot of
Jones
things.
Alex Jones types in Idaho, though. There's a bunch of Jones types in Idaho, they're gonna vote for the real estate guy because they think that he's gonna. Oh, I mean, I've got some words that I probably shouldn't use even on on Blog Talk Radio. By the way, if you're interested in a state by state analysis, I don't like a lot of these what I like to call the bourgeois media election sites. My friend Josh Gonzalez, who is a professor and debate coach in Texas, in Houston, has set up his own private little Google Doc that has projections and sort of a matrix based on what the polls, particularly 538.com, have where they have set particular candidates, as well as when the polls close, because the question of when the polls close can tell us when we will find out or when we're likely to find out, unless there's kind of Florida
Absolutely.
Situation. And in this particular case, given the states we already know a lot about and sort of likely outcomes in those states, my friend Josh Gonzalez has said, you know, this could be, we could know pretty early on November 8th. We could actually know pretty early in the evening. This is what he says. Clinton is going to start the night out with 238 electoral votes. At
wow.
least those
That's
are the states
big.
That are within a 95% confidence interval, according to the data that Josh
wow.
had reported. So 238 electoral votes within the 95% confidence interval. And then at 7:30 Eastern, I assume, North Carolina and Ohio will both close their polls. And those are still considered up for grabs. That's another 33 electoral votes. So
wow.
you've got 238, you plus 33. I don't have a calculator in front of me here.
What is Pennsylvania in that model?
Pennsylvania is one of the is one of, it's up for grabs. My understanding is Clinton is up in Ohio, down in Ohio, down slightly in North Carolina, up in Pennsylvania and Florida. New Hampshire is also one that's too close to call right now, but of course New Hampshire is only 4 electoral votes.
Yeah.
So you get the 238 that she presumably
plus
will
33.
Already have. Plus 33, that's 271, of course.
Yeah, that puts her over the top. Yeah, that puts her over the top.
That puts you over the top. However, Ohio is one that that folks think that Clinton is going to lose.
I don't think so.
Anyway.
I just don't think so. And you know what? This is why I think. And I'm just going to and I know obviously we're all talking speculation. All of us pundits. All of us talking heads. But I just don't see her losing Pennsylvania or Ohio Florida maybe. But North Carolina, I think she's going to take. I think she's going to take those three. And the reason is because when Paul Ryan today came out and basically told all of their donors, hey, we're really in trouble in down-ticket races, jettison Trump and help us, the rest of his caucus was livid. They're like, you cannot tie us to Trump. I mean, even by saying, hey, we're going to lose the House because of Trump, you make us look like fools. And
I'm shocked that that folks are talking about the House turning now.
I know.
I could not have possibly predict this. I also don't think it's going to happen. I just don't believe that's going to happen.
I think it will.
At 8 o'clock Eastern on election night, Florida, New Hampshire, and Pennsylvania will all close. That's 53 more votes into the pool, of which Clinton would need 32. She wasn't going to get anything from North Carolina or Ohio.
Well, I think we are watching the Titanic sink, and I don't think. And when I say that, I don't just mean Donald Trump. I think we're seeing 40 years. I mean, Donald Trump, and I was talking to Jason Nichols, of course, who's a friend of our program, a co-producer, who's been co-host on this many times. I was talking to him today about this, and we basically agreed that this is Donald Trump is not a one-time flash in the pan candidate. He is the personification, the culmination, the personification of the Reagan Revolution. All of the misogyny, all of the racism, all of the stick it to the poor and give it to the rich, all of it is Donald Trump. All of it. This is 40 years, and I'm 45 years old, so the Reagan Revolution started in 1980. So it's been most of my life. I've lived under, since 2010, we've had the T-evangelicals or the T-billies or whatever you want to call them, the T-baggers. And every time Barack Obama or the left, if you want to call Barack Obama the left, although I'm reluctant to do that, even if you want to say the liberals, when the liberals came to the table with the conservatives over the last 10 years or so, it's always been, hey, what is your starting position, Republicans? Oh, if that's what you want, we'll give it to you. And their answer was always, no, it's not enough. We want you to give us what we were asking for in the first place. But since you're willing to give us what we want in the first place, we want more. And if you're not willing to give us more, we're willing to close down the government 3 times. four times. We're willing to close down the government until you give us what we want, until our constituents call us on the phone. Once they say, hey, you know, we really want those Social Security checks, then we'll let the government start running again. And that this is he's absolutely the culmination of that 40 years of misogyny, of homophobia, of stick it to the poor, of everything that the military wants it gets without question. You know, that $3 trillion debacle of
right.
that fighter plane that won't fly in rain or whatever the hell it is.
Right.
You know, it's just a matter of give the Republicans whatever they want, and if they don't get what they want, then we need to go ahead and shut down the government. And that's what he is. He's turned in to exactly this. And, you know, I keep coming back to this, and I've said this many times in my private life. You know what? It's like it comes down to the fascism. If you appease them, you finally have to fight them. And we're, you know, and this is where we're at. And luckily that they are going to go down. This is where the teabaggers finally learn that, you know what, we're not interested in your anti everything, but, you know, you,
mm-hmm.
because that's what it comes down to. If you're not me, you don't look like me, you don't think like me, then you're not American. That this is where they're going to get their comeuppance.
So I have a slightly different take on this. Surprise, surprise. I think that Clinton wins handily in this election. I don't think that the seeds of or the roots of right-wing extremism are dealt a fatal blow in this election. And the reason that I say that is that the neoliberal order that these centrist Democrats are determined to prop up. They really think they can have it both ways. They think that they can TPP, and they can have privatization and rule by finance capital. They think they can have those things and throw enough scraps off the table to the people that aren't at the table. And what's going to happen is, you know, that they're going to play into the same roots, the same messes, and the same political morass and pornographication of politics rise to people like the real estate tycoon. And so I think that the important question becomes what we do in the meantime. And that's what we do, like what people like you and me do. And on that note, too, I'm going to say for a long time, my Democratic friends have been saying, please, if you live in a swing state, you know, if you live in a purple state, don't vote third party. Don't vote third party. And you know, finally, I could just concede the argument and say, okay, fine. What people just vote however you want. I don't care. And if you live in a swing state and you just are too scared to vote for a third party, that's fine. I don't live in a swing state. I am going to vote third party. And then they started going, no, you can't do that because Clinton needs a mandate. And so you have to vote for her. She's got to get as many votes as she can everywhere to beat this guy even worse. And at that point I said, you know what? You have moved the goalposts. First of all, that theory is
–
I don't buy the theory. I don't buy the theory that somehow this, you know, huge mandate – in fact – I think the bigger mandate that Clinton gets in this election, in terms of the margin she wins by, you know, she will betray her base in proportion to the margin by which she wins.
Well,
the higher the margin, the higher the level of betrayal. And so I'm not convinced. Plus, I just don't like people that move the goalposts. I don't like people that, you know, for months say, just do this, meet me halfway and just do this. And then it's like, no, that's not good enough. And so, you know, so I know I'm being childish about this, but I'm unshackled. I have come unshackled.
Well, think of it as a, actually, you know, this actually ties in perfectly with the conversation I had with Jason Nichols earlier today. We were talking about exactly this. It's like, okay, she needs a mandate. It's true. I do agree. And yes, I don't necessarily agree with, hey, she needs a mandate, because you know what? She's not going to win Wyoming no matter what. So you vote your conscience. Here in Utah, you know what? I'm given that it's a three-way race at this point between some unknown Donald Trump and Bill and Hillary Clinton. You know what, I have to say, you know, at the end of the day, Hillary Clinton is going to be a competent steward of the Republic. I know I don't agree with her on with her neocon foreign policies, but I have to say honestly, from, you know, over the last 3 months or so, that her domestic policy has definitely come more and more in line with what we saw from Bernie Sanders. Now, it's obviously not the full Bernie Sanders policy, but she's come a very, very long way in a very short time. And the reason I think that that has happened is because I believe that she has opened her eyes. Maybe it's debate prep. I don't know what it is. But maybe she's opened her eyes to, hey, you know, there's a constituency out there beyond just Wall Street, and a constituency that could be very powerful to help me make change. Now, I actually do believe that she does have the American public's best interest at heart. She has been a populist crusader all her life, and I know that the Democratic what was it called, the Democratic campaign? No. It was the one that came up with the triangulation thing under Clinton.
Yeah, the DLC, it's now Democratic
defunct.
Leadership.
Yeah,
Council.
The Leadership Council. Yeah, it's now defunct. But and I think that she bought into a lot of that. But I think maybe now that she has come around to say, you know, there's a constituency out there, legitimate constituency that has legitimate concerns, that has actual, you know, workable progressive solutions to domestic policy that could work. And so she's come a long way on domestic policy to my great satisfaction. But
The WikiLeaks and then The Intercept, put out a bunch of the actual quotes from a lot of these speeches that she gave to Goldman Sachs and other things. And it didn't sound at that time like she had come very far. If your contention is that she has come a long way in the last 6 weeks,
I wait with bated breath to see what happens.
I want to see what happens, but it's not going to change what I do and the way I do politics.
No.
So it's really it doesn't matter. There are a bunch of down ballot Democrats that I'm supporting, and there's even one local Democrat that I volunteered for. I think those ask different questions. There are different questions.
That's kind of the point where I was trying to go. I know I had to build up to it, but that's exactly where I was wanting to go with this, is that the down ballot races. Now, Nate Silver, if I remember correctly, if she wins by 10 plus points, she has a very, very good chance of taking the House. Of the Democrats taking the House. If Hillary wins by 10 points nationally, then she has a very good chance of giving the Democratic candidates down ballot a chance of actually taking the House. The Senate most likely is going to go Democratic now at this point, but the House is actually in play. We're not saying it's a certainty. It most likely isn't a certainty, but the fact is if she wins in double digits, the chances are better than 50-50 that they will go Democratic. So now that was actually the point I was trying to get to when I was talking about I'm happy with her with her evolution on progressive domestic policy. The question that I have, and not a question that I have, it's my concern, and this is actually for her as a leader rather than for us as a country, because once she's ensconced in the White House, I think we can all, you know, breathe a sigh of relief that, you know, some thin-skinned Cheeto isn't going to push the button because, you know, somebody flipped him off at, you know, some, you know, the Yugoslav president flipped him off at the UN. In this case, we're what I'm thinking is that down ballot races. Let's say there's a lot of Republicans that are unseated. Democrats come in. People who are running on real progressive. You know, these aren't going to be blue dog Democrats. These aren't, you know, anybody that comes in that replaces a Republican in a competitive race is not going to be a blue dog coming in. Hey, saying, hey, let's no taxes, more war, whatever the, you know, let's just be Republicans light. That's not what she's going to get in the House of Representatives. If the Democrats take the House and the Senate, we're going to have, you know, obviously a big block of progressive movement. Possible, you know, real progressive change that we could see in this country. You know, we're talking energy policy, we're talking transportation, infrastructure, we're talking a lot of things that could. But the thing is that those progressives, those new progressives in the House, of course, the Senate tends to be more conservative no matter what, just by its nature. But those progressives in the House are not going to sit still for a neocon saying, hey, you know what, I'll give you $1 trillion in transportation if you let me start this new war. They're going to say, no, we'll take the $1 trillion and you don't get the war. And that could be a problem for Hillary Clinton because, you know, she is a hawk. There's no doubt about that. Now, right now, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world, Syria, et cetera. Of course, there's still the Horn of Africa. You know, Somalia is still always a problem. You know, and of course, Iraq is, you know, Iraq being, you know, ISIS, et cetera. You know, none of this is going away. And yes, there may be.
No, particularly as long as we keep doing things there, none of it will go away because is what causes these things to happen.
Exactly, but that's my point here, it's
when we get involved. So if there, you know, I think you're right. If it is possible that what all of this could lead up to is momentum shifting somewhat in the opposite direction on some of these key questions, and certainly, I understand, I get that people are afraid of the alternative. I totally get that people are afraid of the alternative, and I don't want to minimize that. I only want to say that you know what needs to happen needs to cut at the root of the problem of why, you know, monstrous rich white sexual predators can come within a hair's breadth of winning the highest office in the country. That's not just something that came ex nihilo. It didn't come out of whole cloth. You know, it was created by years of compromise and including years of lesser evilism. Lesser evilism is part of what got us into the situation that is here now. And so whatever happens has got to turn the tide on that. And so I think that's where, admittedly, and, you know, I mean, it's a gentleman's disagreement. I think that probably you're a little more optimistic about the ability of, you know, of the party of blue, to be the agent
you're absolutely right. I am optimistic in terms of that. My question is, you know, obviously Nancy Pelosi would most likely be the new Speaker of the House. Could she keep them? Not keep them. I mean, would she follow their lead? I mean, basically, at this point, we need to look at this as a we talked to, like I said, I talked with Jason Nichols at length this morning about this. This, as he calls it, the bifurcation. This is where the 40 years of conservative rule of, you know, the rich man, you know, reveling in his power and the devil take the hindmost kind of thing, where that comes to an end. This isn't just a point of the pendulum swinging back. This is the pendulum stopping in mid-swing and turning around. I really think that we are at a bifurcation where that we are going to say, you know what, you racist people, you people who believe that your might, because you have 75 guns, believe it or not, you can only use two at any given time, depending on their size, at most. You know, you know, liberals have guns too. You know, that kind of thing, is where it comes down to, there is no way that we are going to simply let. Let me put it this way. There is no way that we are going to let this slip by. We're not going to say, hey, you know what, let's just see how we can incrementalist this. I want to let everybody know we're 20 seconds in. I want to keep this conversation going for a few more minutes after. So if you're listening to the live, you're probably going to have to stop and listen to the tape afterward or listen to the recording. But we're about 10 seconds out. So if you're listening to the live, thank you for listening tonight. We will be back next weekend or next Thursday to talk about the Donald Trump or rather the debate. Anyway, Matt,
sure thing.
What I wanted to say was we're off the air now, so we're on the recording. What I felt was that you're right. I am a little optimistic about where the Democratic Party can go, but I think that this is a case where the leader can be led by the people behind the people she leads, where she can follow, she can say, this is where public sentiment is going. Mm-hmm. I am a leader of a democracy. This is where I need to find my way of leading them within the context of what they want. And I really think that Hillary could read that. I mean, yes, I still think that there's no way around her hawkish foreign policy. But at the end of the day, I think that here in America, I really think that Donald Trump pointed this out, and I have to give him credit for that. Not that he intended to do it; it's just that it's a byproduct of what he's done. But I really think that America is ready to turn inward. We've had 10 years, mm-hmm. 15 years of disastrous wars where we haven't won
one of
them.
That I totally agree with. We are ready for a change. And so the question is, will the executive lead, follow?
Yeah.
Run
or get out of the way.
Get out of the way. I feel like, a lot of times what these Democratic presidents do is, or at least what the last couple of them have done, and what, given her, speeches to Goldman Sachs indicate, I don't think that she's going to follow, and I don't think she's going to lead, and I don't think she's going to get out of the way. I think, that there's a possibility that there's going to be some interference run.
I don't disagree with you. I think you're right.
I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that, sad sack at the party, the Debbie Downer with the sad trombone. I don't want to be that. So I'm willing to, and like I said, I mean, I'm willing to wait and see. And like I said, it doesn't change the way that I do politics. It doesn't change the things that I fight for, the things that I write about, which you can read at Political Context and Cowboys on the Commons. It doesn't change any of that. We'll see what happens.
Well, and I'm all for, I'm actually looking forward to this third debate coming up on the 19th. It'll be on, if I understand correctly, it's next Wednesday, the 19th, and it starts at, I believe it's 9 p.m. Eastern, which would be 7 p.m. Mountain, and the rest of you can figure out what time that'll be for you.
Yeah, exactly. And it's at UNLV, and another good friend of mine, Jake Thompson, the director of debate at UNLV, is hosting that debate. I don't think he is not going to be front and center, obviously, but I wish he would be, because he would be the best moderator of all of them. He's an extremely tough-minded guy. That last debate is going to be at UNLV. And as there's talk of not even having a last debate.
Yeah, I've heard about that, and I hope they do go through with it. I mean, I can see Donald Trump bowing out, but of course he's a narcissist, so I doubt he would actually do that. And I can't imagine Hillary giving, if Hillary, why at this point? I mean, I saw an SNL thing a couple weeks ago where they did the first debate, and the actress, I forget her name, who plays Hillary Clinton, Alec Baldwin was playing. The one who played Alec Baldwin was playing Trump, and they said, would you like to take your 2 minutes? Let him do it. Let him keep talking, because he just keeps doing his damage. And that's exactly the way. And I don't see, there's no downside for Hillary for doing a third debate.
And Donald Trump not showing up just shows his weakness. So there's going to be a third debate. And I have to say that, you know, I am totally entertained with this. I absolutely love watching this narcissistic fascist go down in flames. You know, I'm absolutely loving it because, you know, he brought it about. But if he had just kept his head down, if he had never run for president, if he had just decided to be the fraud that he's been all his life, without deciding to raise himself up to national, you know, I want to be the leader of the Fourth Reich.
To be the fraud in chief.
He hadn't decided he wanted to be the fraud in chief, you know, nobody would be talking about his groping people on airliners in the 1980s. Nobody would be talking about his, you know, grabbing women inappropriately whenever they want. Even Tic Tac said after, without context, no, they didn't mention, after he said that, Tic Tac said on Twitter, Tic Tac wants nothing to do, no, Tic Tac wants, where was it, the actual quote was, Tic Tac respects all women, we find the recent statements and behavior completely inappropriate, unacceptable. That's because, and there's no context, you don't know who he's talking about unless you're here.
Yeah.
If you put that up 25 years from now, nobody will know what the hell's going on. But
now,
there's no need
for
context.
But it was pretty safe that everyone knew in this context.
And the idea here is not want their product. They don't want their product associated with it. It's that.
And on that note, I just want to say, and this will be the last thing I say. Shout out to Michelle Obama. You don't hear me praising the Obamas all the time, but you know, most certainly, royalty among the. The ruling class, as far as I'm concerned. And shout out to Michelle Obama for her very strong rebukes of basically the language and logic of sexual assault, which is what this election has come down to. Big shame on and hope that karma catches up to all of the people that all of the right-wing pundits who have minimized what is essentially non-consensual contact. Don't minimize.
Oh
that.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous. And
it
you
is,
know, and that's
absolutely.
Why I, you know, that's like once that you know once that has sort of come into the foreground, then again, you know, even, you know, nothing in my ideology makes me, you know, inoculates me from wanting to see this person, lose badly, and get what karma has in mind for him. And that's, you know, that's all I will say about that. I think I'm done. I'm done for tonight.
I am too. I think that I'd like to thank our listeners, people listening live, of course, those who have listened through the entire 37 minutes plus that we've had on the air tonight. I hope you will join us. We will definitely have a show next Thursday, the 20th of October, and that'll be one to talk about because we'll have the debate, the third and final presidential debate, fresh on our minds. I'm Gary Barkley. Thank you, Matt, for joining us. Not for joining us, for co-hosting tonight. And I hope you have a good week. And I hope you keep accumulating all that the great comments that you have for us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a good night.
You too.